Let's turn in our Bibles tonight, if you would, to the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 11. We're just about done with the book of Ecclesiastes. I certainly have enjoyed this study over the last several months, and I trust that you have as well. We look now tonight into the middle of Ecclesiastes, chapter 11. We're going to begin reading in verse number 7, and we'll read through to the middle part of Ecclesiastes, chapter 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse number 7 is where we'll begin reading. And as you're directing your attention there, I want you to think, especially those of you who are older tonight, about how startling it is when you realize how quickly the days of your youth have flown by. And I often hear this from folks who are a little bit older. They start talking about how quickly the years have gone by, and then they start to comment about how the older they get, the faster time seems to go. This is a startling fact, and it is true that the springtime of life quickly fades into the twilight of old age, and our life is winding down before we know it. Now, as we've come to Ecclesiastes chapter 11, the preacher, by this point, is an old man. He's lived, he's experienced, he's seen some things, he's come to some conclusions, and he has some truth to share. And in particular, in our text tonight, he has some advice for those who are younger. And so with the Lord's help tonight, for the next few moments, I'd like to give some advice to the youth. But if you're not young anymore, don't worry, you'll have some things to learn too. Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse number 7 says, "Truly the light is sweet, and a pleasant thing it is for the eyes to behold the sun. But if a man live many years and rejoice in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they shall be many. All that cometh is vanity. Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. Therefore remove sorrow from thy heart, and put away evil from thy flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun, or the light, or the moon, or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain, in the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look out of the windows be darkened, and the doors shall be shut in the streets when the sound of the grinding is low, and he shall rise up at the voice of the bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. Also, when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fears shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets. Or ever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. Then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, all is vanity." If there's one thing that the preacher emphasizes over and over again in the book of Ecclesiastes, it is the tragedy of wasted youth. You see, he regrets that so much of his youth was wasted without wisdom. And I've seen it to be true many times that often people fail to procure wisdom until their youth is gone. And then they bemoan that they no longer have the strength and energy which they once did, but now they finally have wisdom to know how to use that strength and energy. I want to say to you tonight that this neglect is wholly unnecessary, especially for the youth who are here tonight in the sound of my voice. There's absolutely no reason for you to sidestep God's wisdom and to waste the precious resource of youth and energy which God has given to you. I understand that it's unlikely that you appreciate fully the gift that that is, and yet one day you'll look back and you'll understand what a gift it was. The energy, the strength, the drive that you have now as a youth is something that one day you'll wish that you had again. But the truth is, because of God's wisdom, we need not waste our youth. In fact, we can invest it very wisely and find that it brings tremendous returns. So in these verses, we find the preacher giving some advice to the young people. First of all, in verses 7 and 8 of chapter 11, he says this, "Remember the days of darkness, even while you enjoy the light." Now, he uses a metaphor in verse number 7, and it's a metaphor that all of us can understand. He says, "Truly, the light is sweet and a pleasant thing. It is for the eyes to behold the sun." And I want you to think for just a moment, the metaphor that he's painting, the picture that he's painting with words, think about how beautiful it is when you are up early enough to see the sun rise. On a morning when the sun comes up, and you can see the sun coming up over the horizon, and you watch the world wake up, and you enjoy as the lights come on in the world around you and all the different things that happen as the sun is rising in the sky. It's a beautiful and wonderful thing. Truly, our lives are blessed because of the light of the sun. It seems like a small thing, but if you consider, truly, our lives would not be the same if it was not for the sun being present. In fact, we could go so far as to say our lives would not exist without the life of the light of the sun. The light of the sun means so much to us. Just in the last several days, many folks have commented about how pleasant it is to feel the heat from the sun. I remember when Allison and I lived in Finland for a few months, and we arrived there in the wintertime, and so we experienced the cold of winter and the dark that took place there. Of course, that part of the world, in the city of Helsinki, in the wintertime, there's a period of time where basically the sun doesn't seem to come up. It feels like it's dark all day long. And we comment about this often. The spring morning when we were out for a walk and the sun was in the sky, and it was the first time in several months that the sun felt warm. And we commented to each other on that day, "Doesn't that feel wonderful? After the long winter, doesn't it feel nice to feel the warmth of the sun?" We had seen the sun other days, but this day we felt the sun. And think about what a marvelous thing that is, the pleasant heat of the sun which warms our world. And I understand that sometimes it gets too hot and we regret that the sun is so blazing and so hot in the sky, but generally speaking, we enjoy the heat that comes from the sun. Those beams of light and the warmth of the sun cause plants to grow and provide us with food. Truly, it is a blessing to us. And the illumination of the world around us by the light of the sun that God sends every day is a gift from God. I think what he's saying to us is, every morning when you see the sun come up, thank God for his goodness to you. It's like God is postmarking the day or putting his fingerprint on the day and just reminding you, I'm here and I'm blessing your life and you have much to be thankful for. And it may seem like a small thing, but the light of the sun is a wonderful thing. Now, this is indicative of all of the goodness of God, of all of the blessings of God. And God blesses us in so many ways every day that we can enjoy. And we have all of these blessings, but in particular, he's talking about the youth. And he says in verse 8, "If a man live many years and rejoice in them all," all right, pause for just a second and think about how remarkable that would be, to live a long life and to not have, according to the text, to not have a bad day, to have all good days, all good circumstances, all blessings, all good things. We realize that this is not normal, and perhaps we would even go so far as to say it is not possible. It is hyperbole that he's using to describe a man who is blessed supremely. And he says, if you are this way and you have so many blessings in your life, don't forget, remember the days of darkness, for they shall be many. So he wants us, in the midst of our blessings, in the midst of the joy that we experience, in the midst of the all of the indications of God's goodness to us, he wants us to be reminded that there are some days of darkness. This is something to remember. Now, what are these days of darkness? Well, there's at least two explanations which could be possible. It could, first of all, refer to the burdens and the sorrows that we naturally expect to bear in the course of our natural life. We understand that we have good days and we have bad days. We have days when we see the sun come up, and we have days like just a couple days ago when it seems like the sun isn't there at all. It's just cloudy all day. And that's picturesque of our life, isn't it? There's times when we seem to be basking in the blessings of God and rejoicing in His provision. And there's other days when we wonder where God is. We wonder what is happening. Days of darkness and sorrow, grief, burdens that we bear. So it could be referring to that. He could be saying, especially to the youth, if you're rejoicing right now and enjoying the blessings, go ahead and enjoy them, but don't forget that there's some days of darkness. A second possibility for this idea of the days of darkness, is that he could be, and I think this is the more likely of the two, he could also be referring to the time after our life on this earth. The time when our life on this earth is over. This is a time for which we should prepare. And when he speaks about them as days of darkness, I believe he has in mind this idea that there's some obscurity. There's not a full understanding of exactly what that's going to be like. What is it going to mean when this life is over? Even with the benefit of biblical revelation, there are many things which we do not understand about what happens after this life is finished. And so he says to the young man, and we can apply it to the old man just as ably, remember the days of darkness even while you enjoy the light. It may be this evening that you've been enjoying the light. You've been enjoying God's blessing in your life. Maybe for you, things are good and things are going well and the blessing of God seems to be there and God's favor is upon you. It seems as if God is smiling upon your life. Enjoy the light. Don't regret it. Don't excuse it. Don't dismiss it. Don't be ungrateful for it. But remember that there's some days of darkness too. He moves on in verse 9 and 10 with a second bit of advice. And he says this in verse 9 and 10, rejoice in your youth, but remember that judgment is coming. So he talks about the joys of youth in verse 9. Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart, and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. Now it's an interesting thing in verse 9. He talks about the rejoicing that should be characteristic and often is characteristic of the youth. In fact, many times when we think about youth, those who do not have the maturity of years and perhaps haven't faced many of the trials of life yet, they tend to be marked by, we might use the word silliness or frivolity, a sense of laughter and rejoicing or laughing about the things of life. And generally, as we get older, we become a little more sober and we realize that there's many things which weigh heavily upon us and we find it a little more difficult to laugh. We find it more difficult to enjoy some frivolity because there's so many burdens and things that are weighing on us. Now, he says to the youth, rejoice. It's appropriate for young people to rejoice. It's appropriate for them to enjoy their youth. God has blessed you with strength and energy. The truth is, in your youth, there's many pleasurable things to enjoy. Now, he says, walk in the ways of thine heart and in the sight of thine eyes. Youth tends to be a time when most people have a lot of energy and a lot of drive to pursue their dreams and to go after the things that they hope to accomplish. Youth is a time for dreaming. It's a time for doing because you have lots of energy and strength. And even after you have done all the things that you need to do in your youth, there's often an overflow of energy that you can use and expend in the enjoyment of life. Do some of you older ones remember when you used to be able to go to work all day, and then after you got done with work, you could go and have fun times with your friends and stay awake until the wee hours of the morning, and then you could get up early the next morning and you could do it again, and you could do that day after day, and you seemed to have just a limitless resource of energy? Some of you say, I never remember that. But some of you remember how it was. I look back to a time when I was in my early 20s, and I just marvel now at how much energy I had then. I think about the things that I would be involved in, and I would be going and doing all these things, and now just thinking about it makes me tired. But then it was like, well, I never got tired. I didn't run out of energy. I had plenty of reserves. And that's how youth is. Typically speaking, youth is a time of great energy. It's a time when we can expend a lot of our energy in pursuing after the dreams that we have. And part of this is the enjoyment of life, the enjoyable things that come along with youth. Typically speaking, young people enjoy some of the things of life more than older people. Older people have gotten more tired, grumpy, not so interested anymore. But younger people, they like to enjoy these things. Now, he says, in the midst of this, as you're walking in the ways of your heart and in the sight of thine eyes, and the idea is you're doing the things that you want to do. You're fulfilling your pleasures. You're following after your dreams. You're living the life that God has given you to live. But there's something very important, he says. Know thou that for all these things, God will bring thee into judgment. You know, the sad thing is that young people with a lot of energy and a drive for pleasure rarely have God's wisdom to temper that energy. And they find themselves partaking of things which God forbids and which can become a heavy burden to them later in life. For instance, they have unbridled reserves of desire for pleasure, and those unbridled reserves of desire can lead them into far-flung fields of forbidden fruit, where they will face consequences for the decisions that they are making. And so the wise man wisely warns us, in the expenditure of your energy and in the way that you are spending your youth and the energy that God has given to you, don't ever forget that one day you're going to stand before God. One day there will be a judgment. The things that you involve yourself in will be brought before the all-seeing eyes of God for His consideration. So, in your frivolity and in your excitement, don't forget that there is a God in heaven who is observing the things that you're doing. He's hinting now at the fact that there may be a better way for us to expend our energy than simply pursuing after pleasure and the things that our heart desires. Now, he says something curious in verse number 10, which accompanies verse 9. He says that we should remove sorrow from thy heart and put away evil from thy flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. And the truth is that in our lives, even in our youth, there's many things that bring sorrow and calamities into our mind, into our life. But there's also things that can be done to mitigate this sorrow and to avoid these calamities, especially the calamities of the flesh. And that word that's used in verse 10, evil, refers to calamities that can befall us, sicknesses and afflictions and things like that. And we live in a really interesting time in which there are things that can be done to put away some of the consequences of sorrow and the calamities that we might face in our life. For instance, wise choices can keep your path from converging with sorrow through foolishness. If you're wise enough in your youth and you're careful about how you expend your energy, then what you'll find is that you can avoid a lot of the pain that other people around you are facing because you simply chose a better path. And that better path doesn't tend to intersect with the sorrows that come as the consequences of sin. If I could just say to the young people who are here, I agree with the wise man, and obviously it's recorded in Scripture. You have a great privilege to enjoy your youth. You ought to enjoy your youth, but be careful about the decisions you're making, because the decisions that you're making now are going to have an effect on your life for years to come. Be careful how you're expending your energy. Don't needlessly expose yourself to consequences which could bring tremendous heaviness for the rest of your life. And if you don't understand what I'm talking about, maybe you would want to get alongside some of the older folks who are sitting in the auditorium and just ask them if they have any regrets about some of the decisions they made in their youth. Because I guarantee there's people sitting here tonight who wish that they had made some different decisions in the past. And even today, they're bearing the scars and the sorrows of those foolish decisions. So be careful. You can do some things to remove sorrow from your heart and to put away evil from your flesh. There's many diseases that you don't have to have. There's many sorrows that you don't have to subject yourself to if you will only choose to live in wisdom and expend the energy that God has given to you in a proper way. God is not trying to steal enjoyment from you. God is trying to protect you from things that could weigh upon your heart for all the rest of your life. So be careful about those things. But we also know not only can wise choices help us, but the promises of God can also help us by bringing assurance to a position of doubt. Learn young, learn in your youth to flee to the promises of God, to find comfort in the promises of God, to allow your perspective to be adjusted by the promises of God. And you will find that the promises of God can be a balm to your soul like no medicine that this world can possibly formulate. Doctors wish that they could come up with these kinds of answers, but God has given these answers freely in His Word. And we find that there is a tremendous treasure house in the promises of God. And then we live in a time in our lives when God has provided many things that mitigate some of the hardship of life. I mean, truthfully, we live in a time of convenience. We live in a time when information is at our fingertips. We live in a time when many of the things that people used to have to do and that ordered the fabric of their life, the moments of their days, are no longer necessary for us. There's so many different things that are available in our society through technology and medicine and all these sorts of things that make our life a lot easier and provide us with the opportunity to pursue after other things. And so he says, we can use those things and they can be a benefit and a blessing to us. So his counsel is, remember the days of darkness even while you enjoy the light. And then he says, rejoice in your youth, but remember that judgment is coming. And finally, in chapter 12, verses 1 through 7, he says to us, remember your Creator now. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth. This is the challenge that headlines chapter 12. And it's a challenge that we're going to return to a little bit later in the message because it is an overriding theme of the book of Ecclesiastes. In fact, it is the resolving principle which makes sense out of a lot of the confusion that is expressed in the earlier chapters. I believe what the preacher is expressing to us in the form of an admonition and a command is also a wish. If only I had remembered my Creator in the days of my youth. And I've heard this many times from people, especially people who got saved later in life, who have expressed this thought, if only I had come to Christ sooner. If only I hadn't spent my youth pursuing after my own things, if only I had understood how important eternal things were at that time, and I wouldn't have gone down the road that I went down. Now, if you find yourself in that place tonight, there certainly is a place for regret, but I don't want you to get caught up so much in that regret that you miss the wonder of salvation. And the wonder of salvation is that the goodness of God leadeth thee to repentance. And that God finds people in all sorts of different circumstances, and He's good to save people who are on all kinds of different roads. So wherever God found you, praise God that He found you. Don't spend so much time regretting the past and your poor decisions that you fritter away the present and neglect your opportunity to serve God now. But there still is a challenge for those of us who are young. Notice how I slipped myself in there. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth. He wants us to remember our Creator. Why? He says, the time is coming that there will be evil days, that the years will draw nigh when we will say, I have no pleasure in them. And then he goes on in the following verses to describe in a poetic way the burdens of old age. Now, this is not meant to discourage those who are elderly from serving the Lord. It simply is recognizing the plain truth of life, which is that life tends to get more difficult as you get older. I think it was George Burns who said something like, the way you know that you're old is when you stoop to tie your shoes and you wonder what else you could do while you're down there. And some of you who are old enough can identify with that. You've learned the efficiency of planning. You think, if I'm going to walk to that side of the house, I might as well do everything that I need to do on that side of the house for the rest of the day, so I don't have to do that again. Or maybe you think about going up and down the stairs and you think, well, I really just want to plan it so that when I go downstairs in the morning after sleeping, I don't have to come back up the stairs until it's bedtime, because it's a great deal of effort and pain to climb the stairs. Well, what are these evil days, these days of no pleasure? Well, we won't spend a great deal of time on this poetic description, but it is somewhat humorous and somewhat sad all at the same time. For instance, he talks in verse 2 about the sun and the light, the moon and the stars being darkened, and the clouds not returning after the rain. And he's talking about the season of life in old age, where there's this sense that the bright hope of youth has faded. And now your life seems to be marked, instead of by the hopefulness of spring and youth and sunshine, your life tends to be marked by difficulty and hardship, by aches and pains, by the understanding that you have a lot more time behind you than you do before you, by realizing that you no longer have the strength and energy to do the things that you now know how to do. Isn't that a tragedy of old age? By the time we get older, we know how to do things, but we don't have the strength to do it anymore. And the young people don't want to listen to us when we try to explain to them the right way to do it. Because after all, they're going to learn the same way that we did, except by the time that they learn, they'll probably be too old to have the energy to use their wisdom. Generation after generation, it tends to repeat itself. The clouds returning after the rain is the idea of accumulating troubles one right after the other. It's like a storm that follows a storm. It seems like in your older years, physical illness, weakness, and difficulty tend to pile up. I remember my wife's grandfather before he went out into eternity. I would usually ask him when we would see him, "How are you doing?" And he would say, "Oh, not too bad." And he'd make some comment about old age and the difficulties. And he'd say, "Old age is great as long as you don't weaken," and things like that. But then I would say, "Well, what have you been up to?" And he would begin to list for me, "Well, we went to this doctor on this day, and that doctor on this day, and this doctor on this day." He said, "My social calendar is filled up with doctor's visits." Some of you understand that, don't you? Some of you feel that in your life. And that's the sense of old age. It seems like there's difficulty after difficulty because weakness is piling on top of weakness. Then he goes on to speak about this weakness in verse 3. And he speaks about the keepers of the house trembling and the strong men bowing themselves. And most Bible commentators think this is referring to the bodily frame, to the muscles and the bones. And the truth is that men who were once strong are now weak. They don't have the ability anymore. They don't have the strength. Where one time they were as strong as a bull, now they need someone else to pick up the lightest things for them. Now their arms tremble and their legs are stooped and their back is hunched over with weakness. Before you mock a person in this position, don't ever forget that you'll be there before you know it. He's describing a condition of life which, if you live long enough, will characterize every single one of us. This is why I think we ought to be particularly respectful of elderly people. And it's a terrible tragedy to me when I see young people mocking older people for their weakness. It's as if they don't have the wisdom to understand that in just a few years they're going to be in the exact same place. He talks about the keepers shall tremble and the grinders shall cease. Because they are few. What are those grinders? The teeth. The teeth start falling out. You start losing your teeth and you can't chew anymore. I remember my grandpa and my grandma. When I was a kid, my grandparents didn't have their teeth anymore. And of course, we live in a day of medical technology where you can get dentures. And it was normal to go into Grandma and Grandpa's bathroom and see their teeth on the counter. And they'd take them out at night and brush them up and leave them laying on the counter for use in the morning. we could be thankful for that, right? And before that technology was available, what would happen? Well, when your teeth fell out, you didn't have anything to chew food with. All of a sudden, it's hard to get the nutrition that you need. Your body starts to fail. You get weaker, and eventually you die. But this is the way of life. Eventually your grinders are going to cease. Those that look out of the windows will be darkened. Older people get cataracts and their eyes get cloudy. They can't see as well at night anymore and can't see as well up close and can't see as well far away. And all of a sudden their vision isn't the same. This is just a part of life. Young people don't understand this because their vision is great. They don't understand mom and dad talking about, "I can't see that. I'm trying to focus on it. I can't read it." They laugh at their parents, and they don't understand that one day they'll be in the same place. He talks about the doors being shut in the streets, and the sound of the grinding is low. And the idea there is that it's hard to hear. It's hard to make out the things that once were easy to hear. And some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. Someone's talking to you and you're trying desperately to hear the words that they're saying and you can't hear anything because of the background noise. You can't make out what they're saying to you. The older couple that's watching television together and he wants it turned up to the highest volume and she can't see it. And so they're trying to figure out how to set the television set. This is just the realities of life. the sound of the grinding. Some Bible commentators suggest that this is the joyfulness that is heard when it's the harvest time and the grinding of the wheat and preparing for the food and the voices of the young people who are bringing in the harvest, but the older folks can't hear that anymore. And it's like they're not partaking in the joy because they just don't understand what's going on. And yet, they rise up at the voice of the bird. They rise up at the voice of the bird. In the morning, when they should be sleeping a little later, the birds wake them up. They can't sleep anymore. Sleep is gone from them. Is this sounding familiar to any of you? There's these other sounds that they wish they couldn't hear that easily disturb their sleep, and it's hard for them to get the rest that their body needs. And the daughters of music shall be brought low. Music that once brought pleasure doesn't seem so enjoyable anymore. It's just kind of like, it's not that interesting. They become afraid. There's fears that are in the way. Afraid of that which is high and fears being in the way. And oftentimes as people get older, irrational fears become common. Things that they never were afraid of before that all of a sudden they're uncertain about. They're concerned about losing their balance, concerned about falling, concerned about missing a turn, and they no longer want to drive. They're concerned about being on the highway because of the fast traffic. And then you get some hot rod kid behind grandma who's driving, and he's irritated at her because she's not driving fast enough. So he throws some choice words at her and throws it down a gear and zooms past her in the other lane. Meanwhile, she's about to have a meltdown behind the steering wheel because what is this crazy person doing? She's terrified. You think about that. One day you'll be in the same place if you're not there now. Some people think the almond tree flourishing is perhaps a reference to the pale-colored blossoms that are representative of the fading of the color from the hair and the skin. As you get older and your hair starts to change color or fall out, as the case may be, your skin no longer has the youthful glow, and whether you like it or not, you start looking old. It's just the way that we go. Now, we don't like this in our society, so we have lots of things that we can do. We can have plastic surgery, we can color our hair, we can deny it, and we can fight against it for as long as possible. But the truth is, whether you like it or not, you're still getting old. The grasshopper shall be a burden. Like a grasshopper at the end of its life moves slowly, so an elderly person finds it difficult to move from one place to another. If you've ever gotten behind an elderly person in the grocery store or in Walmart, just be patient. You don't always have to be in such a hurry. It's fine. If you get to where you're going a minute later, it's not going to hurt you. That person that's shuffling and frustrating you because they're taking too long to choose and don't know whether to go right or left, this is just how life works. And one day you'll be in the same place, those of you who aren't already there. Desire shall fail. There's not much pleasure or desire for pleasure anymore because there's a lack of strength. And there's a diminishing of the senses with which we experience pleasure. Many times I've spoken to elderly people who were getting close to the end of their life, and we'll talk about this and that, and they'll say something to me like, I just don't really like to eat anymore. Why not? Food doesn't taste like anything to me. Doesn't taste the same. I've lost my sense of taste, and it's not that enjoyable. I know I need to eat to live, but it's not like when I was younger and I actually enjoyed it. Many times I've heard that. There's a lacking of desire. This is the exact opposite of the youth. The youth have this drive and this vitality and this all of this desire, and the older person doesn't have that desire anymore. Why? Well, because they're preparing to go to their long home. They're preparing for the very end of the journey. They know they're at the tail end, that life is winding down. The pictures that are used in verse 6 seem to describe the moment of death. when the silver cord is loosed, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. And the idea is that death tends to come suddenly. Even though we've seen it coming for a while, it comes suddenly. It's surprising. And there's a drastic change when death comes. But see, all of this is happening because death is on its way, and man goes to his long home. Verse 7, the dust returns to the earth as it was. The body goes in the ground, goes back to dust, and the spirit returns unto God who gave it. There's a separation between body and spirit. The body goes into the ground to await resurrection, either a resurrection unto life eternal in the presence of God, or a resurrection unto condemnation in the lake of fire. The spirit goes before God. There's a responsibility to God. For those who are saved, they will be with the Lord forever. And this is a wonderful picture. It is, as described in the New Testament, a setting free from the bonds of this earth and the frailty of the flesh to be brought into the presence of the Lord. But for those who are unsaved, it's not that at all. And we've heard it said many times, they're in a better place. Not necessarily. If they didn't know the Lord, they're not in a better place. It's a very sobering reality. And so he says, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher. All is vanity. His sentence is, if this is all there is, then what is life? It's emptiness. It's useless. But this is not all there is. Which is why he headlined the chapter with the statement, remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth. Wherever you find yourself, whatever stage of life you are currently in, could I admonish you along with the words of the preacher tonight? God has given you life and breath and energy and strength and vitality and vision. Don't use it for yourself. Don't hoard it to yourself for your own purposes. Understand that God has given you those things so that you can spend them, invest them for His purposes. That's what it means to remember your Creator now, in the days of your youth. Now, in this time when you have your strength, how are you serving God? What do you have to give to God today? What is it that you are withholding from Him and using for yourself? You will one day regret withholding that from God. He wants it all. You say, but when will there be something for me? You're missing the point entirely. Because when you learn to lose yourself in Him and give it all to Him, you'll find the greatest pleasure and fulfillment that you could ever imagine. There's no regrets in serving the King of Kings. The sad truth is that many people end up giving God the leftovers of their life, because they were too self-absorbed and foolish in their youth to recognize the value of remembering their Creator and living for Him with all their might. But that ought not to be the case for any person in this auditorium tonight. You know better. You have heard the Word of God. And if you choose to not remember your Creator right now, you will do so willfully, with full knowledge that God has the rights upon your life, and you are refusing Him that which He rightfully deserves. You will choose to walk away from Him with the full knowledge that His way is best, but convincing yourself that your way is best. And so the preacher says, remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth. If I could say, on behalf of all of the older folks who are here tonight, and certainly on behalf of the Word of God, and I think on behalf of many older folks who've gone before us and are now in the presence of the Lord, if there is any regret that people have, it is for those moments where they lived for themselves instead of for their king. When they gave themselves to pleasure instead of pouring their life out for the service of God. The truth is, if you forget your Creator and live for yourself, your life will be vanity. Your life will be emptiness. You'll come to the end and you'll wish that you had decided differently. But starting today, right now, no matter what choices you've made in the past, you have the capacity to choose to remember now thy Creator. You might say to me, preacher, I'm old. I'm already experiencing some of the things described in chapter 12. It doesn't matter. Remember now thy Creator in the days of your not youth. Wherever you're at, remember your Creator. Give Him whatever life you have. Obviously, He's given you everything that you have, and you ought to return it to Him, and you ought to live as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Life lived apart from the Creator and only for the pleasure that can be wrung out of the here and now is sure to disappoint. It's all vanity. But life lived for your Creator is sure to bring the greatest satisfaction and enjoyment that you could ever imagine, because our Creator, who is wonderfully good, has made us in His image for a specific purpose and with a specific plan. And it is in the living out of that purpose and plan that we find the very reason that we are on this earth. And we get the greatest satisfaction out of life. Wherever you are in your life, I hope you will remember your Creator. I hope you'll remember that the days of darkness are coming even while you enjoy the light. I hope you'll rejoice in your youth, but remember that judgment is coming. And I hope that you'll remember your Creator now, because He ought to be remembered.